It's Sam Cedar. Introducing whiny ass teeny baby conservatives to the truth. Wow, wow, conservatives. That's you crying. The left just got a little bit louder on The Majority Report.
It is Thursday, January 20th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is The Majority Report, and we are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. I am bathing in the glow of the aftermath of the Lieberman announcement that he will not be running for re-election in 2012. Of course, John McCain suggesting that he become Secretary of Defense. Good luck with that one. Let's jump right in, folks. We have a wonderful program for you today. We will have Professor Eric Kingston. Today we will have the professor who will talk to us about Social Security. We've got some very big news on the Social Security front, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But you will recall that last year, Pew's public poll, their annual survey about the media, revealed Fox News Channel was the, sadly and bizarrely, the most trusted name in news. Well, a year later, there's a slight turnaround. According to the Pew Public Poll's latest survey, Fox is now the most distrusted name in news. That's impressive. What do they call it? From the top to the... There's some saying, right, when that happens to sports teams? From the peak to the valley, to the from the top to the bottom. From the... Dorsey's just walked in. He's a mess. And Fox News, apparently in 2010, 49% of people trusted Fox News, 37% of people distrusted Fox News, and now it is 42% trusting Fox News and 46% distrusting Fox News. From the first to the worst, thank you, Crystal Count. From the first to the worst, from the most to the not most. Or I guess from the least to the, I don't know. Fox trustworthiness rating has fallen by a net margin of 16 points. NBC has increased by 9, ABC and CBS gained a net of 7 points. I'm not sure if MSNBC is even in this survey. They may not have the clearance that Fox has. You know, Fox has much bigger ratings, but you also have to remember that Fox has a lot more clearance than MSNBC does. They're carried on more cable stations. You could argue that's a function of carriage fees and leverage of other media properties, or you could argue that it's function of demands of the local populace. And Jed Lewison at Daily Kos suggests what seems to be going on is that while Fox continues to be trusted by conservatives, moderates, and liberals have soured on the channel. Last year, 48% of moderates and 66% of liberals distrusted Fox News. This year, 60% of moderates and 82% of liberals distrust the network. So Fox's declining trustworthiness ratings reflect a shifting attitude among moderates and liberals. Well, I'm happy for that. You know what I think it is? I think it's Glenn Beck. I mean, what's changed? The rise of Glenn Beck. The exposure of Glenn Beck. And I think, I don't know. I mean, that's conjecture on my part, but I don't know what else is different over there. But that is good news. That is good news. I don't believe we will ever be able to permeate the hermetically sealed bubble that conservatives live in. I mean, and in the post show, I will go through. I got on yesterday's show, I believe it was either in, I can't remember if it was the post show or the pre show, the MRP or the MR. Well, I guess that would be P2. MR pre show. I don't know. MRS or MRP? I had referenced a dinner I had with, I consider him a friendly acquaintance. I've only met him twice, but I like him as a person. A guy who was, I characterized as being a sort of conservative libertarian type. And, of course, my buddy, Matthew, who invited us together, I think just to see us argue, sent him an email and said, Cedar's talking about you. And so I've been engaged in an email, I don't know, battle, discussion, that has, it's been an extraordinary amount of writing back and forth. I will talk more about this later in the post show, but I don't know that, and I don't consider him one of these people. I think he's sort of marginal. But most conservatives, there's just there is value in talking to them, but only to use them as examples for other people, to be illustrative of the right-wing perspective, not to convince them. That's not going to happen. Many of their perspectives will literally die off, like, you know, the anti-gay hatred or something like that. And we're seeing already in the past 10 years just a radical difference in how society looks upon gay people. And to the Obama administration's credit, new regulations regarding hospital visitation rights went into effect on Tuesday, paving the way for members of the LGBT community, lesbian, gay, bi, transgender community, to have further control over their own medical decisions. Under the new protocol, hospitals partaking in Medicare and Medicaid must now allow all patients to decide visitation rights, as well as who to entrust with making medical decisions on their behalf, regardless of sexual or gender identity. In other words, partners, women married to women, men married to men, or men are partnerships, because in many cases marriage is not legal. We're not able to make medical decisions. We're not able to visit their partners in the most critical of times. This is just a heartbreaking story. Janice Legman, who, along with her children, was denied hospital access to her partner, Lisa Pond, in 2007 after Pond suffered an aneurysm. She told ABC News that she's happy with the development but still grieving over the prior hospital practice. Other couples, no matter how they define themselves as families, won't have to go through what we went through, and I am grateful. But the fact that the hospital didn't let our children say goodbye to their mom, that's just something that will haunt me forever. I mean, just think about this for a moment. One of my daughter's good friends in preschool has two moms. And the idea that one of them could be terminally ill and their children could not go in and see their mother because she was not their birth mother, and because the hospital would not recognize the relationship between these two women, is just, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. So that's good news. Kudos to the Obama administration for that change. Were we to have been so lucky that the Bush administration would have been that enlightened? Highly unlikely. They certainly did their best to exploit hatred of gay people to win an election in 2000. I guess it was 2004, if you actually still believe that they won that election. the House yesterday voted for repeal of the health law, in which was a largely symbolic act. In fact, it was only a symbolic act. The House voted Wednesday to repeal the Democrats' landmark health care overhaul, marking what the new Republican majority in the chamber hailed as the fulfillment of a campaign promise. The vote was 245 to 189, with three Democrats joining all 242 Republicans in support of the repeal. Leaders of the Democratic-controlled Senate have said that they will not act on the repeal measure, effectively scuttling it. Oh.
Hey, what happened?
Sorry.
I don't think so.
So it was just, you know, a show for their right-wing base. There are four House committees beginning drafting legislation. Republicans said that they would seek other ways to stop the overhaul by choking off money needed to carry it out and pursuing legislation to undo specific provisions. And the only one they could seem to agree on is the requirement for most Americans to carry health insurance or face penalties. So in other words, they want to repeal the mandate. You know what I say? Good luck to you. Good. Do that. Please, by all means. If you repeal the mandate, you will drive private health insurance industry out of business. And to that I say, kudos, good luck, and God bless. So please, yes, go on and repeal the mandate. In the meantime, there's really not much else for them to do. They could say, like, you know, this expansion of Medicare for the states. States have to go through, but we're not going to fund it. Well, then you will sink states. And that will have ramifications. They would essentially shut down the government. And, of course, Democrats trumpeted the benefits that have already taken effect. These include protections for people who would otherwise be denied insurance coverage based on a pre-existing medical condition, the ability for children to stay on their parents' policy until age 26, and the new tax breaks for small businesses that provide health coverage to their workers. Good luck to the Republicans for that. Now, the funniest part is, what do I always say about people who write in caps? Dorsey? The mic's got to be on. Dorsey's mic's got to be on. Hold on. What do we say about people who respond in all, who write emails in all caps?
They're probably crazy.
Yes. And Representative Joe Wilson tweeted in all caps, "We just repealed Obamacare!" Apparently, Representative Joe Wilson does not understand how the government works. Maybe we should send him a copy of that, you know, that that cartoon about how bills become laws. Because in this case, you'll need the Senate to also approve of your measure, which it's not even going to take up. And then you would need the president not to veto it. So guess what?
Don't piss down my back and tell me it's raining.
Because it's not raining. It's you pissing down my back, Joe Wilson. In all caps! You lie! In other words. Representative Joe Wilson. And, of course, Sarah Palin aide Rebecca Mansour, who said that the targets were just surveyor signs. Said Governor Palin's hard work and sacrifice made today's repeal of Obamacare possible. Please tell the governor thank you. So this woman who resigned from her post as governor of Alaska is taking credit for the repeal of Obamacare, which did not happen.
Sounds consistent.
Yes, I would say that is what we call poetry. That is poetry, ladies and gentlemen. And before we get to our next guest, this story absolutely shocking. And perhaps I'll just give you a slight taste of it. We will maybe discuss it after we talk to the professor about Social Security. But the three top progressive pollsters who spoke to reporters Wednesday at a briefing sponsored by the Economic Policy Institute, the Century Foundation, and Demos. And I'll be speaking to Nomi Prinz from Demos on Ring of Fire this weekend, available on most of your local channels. They have done research which shows that for the public, cutting benefits is the problem, not the solution in regards to Social Security. A post-election poll by Celinda Lake's research partners found that by a margin of 3%, I want you to listen to this carefully, because this is astonishing, found by a margin of 3 percentage points, Americans now trust Republicans in Congress more than Democrats in Congress when it comes to Social Security. This is the first time in the history of the Social Security program, a program that is now over 70 years old, passed by Democrats. The Republican Party plank of 1937 or 6 explicitly said this is socialism. We need to get rid of Social Security. It's the first time ever the American public trusts Republicans more than Democrats to protect it. This is crazy. Poll found confidence in Democrats on the issue dropping 14 points since January 2007, accompanied by a 13-point increase for Republicans. The public favors Republicans over Obama on Social Security by an even larger 6-point margin. Obama's 26% rating is not only less than half of Bill Clinton's at 53%, it's even lower than George Bush at 37%. The pollsters had no doubt that the turnaround stems from statements by Obama and Democratic leaders expressing their openness to cuts in Social Security. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Professor Eric Kingston, from Professor of Social Work at Syracuse's University School of Social Work. And we will discuss Social Security to him. Remember, I am involved in a Social Security jihad on the eve of the State of the Union address, where it has been speculated, reported, that there is a chance that Obama may call for cuts in the guise of raising the retirement age for Social Security. We'll be right back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. Professor Eric Kingston, Professor of Social Work at Syracuse University School of Social Work, also a Senior Research Associate in the Maxwell School Center for Policy Research. He was on the 1982-83 Commission on Social Security Reform and the 1994 Bipartisan Commission on Entitlement and Tax Reform. He also is involved in Social Security Works at StrengthenSocialSecurity.org. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Thank you for having me on. I'm delighted to be here.
I want to talk about the implications of raising the Social Security retirement age. I want to talk about the both from a policy standpoint and from perhaps a political standpoint. But before we get there, I want to ask you about that 1982-83 National Commission. Is that the one that Greenspan chaired?
Yes, it is. And I was staffed to it, by the way, although I very much appreciate the promotion you just gave me.
Well, there's no pay involved in that promotion, but...
That's true.
I'm interested in the work of that commission because many people talk about and cite the notion that because of the baby boom, we are hitting some type of unanticipated demographic boom that is somehow going to tax Social Security's reserves and trust funds in a way that nobody anticipated. But in fact, your commission, the one that you were working as staff on, in fact, did anticipate that. Please tell
us about that. Absolutely. I was staff to it. As you mentioned, I co-direct Social Security Works. The other co-director of Social Security Works is Nancy Altman, who was Alan Greenspan's top aide there. I was aide to the Democrats. The commission, firstly, what's most important to understand is that in 1982, there really was a crisis. If Congress didn't act early in 1983, Social Security would have had to reduce the benefit amounts that went out to people, because by law, Social Security cannot borrow a penny. If it doesn't have revenues coming in, it has to reduce the checks that it cuts out. So that was a crisis. There was a short-term financing crisis. Congress had to act. That's unlike today. Today we have a system that is adequately funded through about 2036. After that, it's about 25 cents short on every dollar that's committed. That's a problem, but it's far, far from a crisis. There's a lot of lead time. And to put it in perspective, Sam, if we eliminated the cap for people who make more than $107,000, they do not pay Social Security tax on top of above $107,000. If, for example, we had everyone pay the same flat rate on all earnings and employers pay that, we would have absolutely no financing problem in Social Security and would have a few dollars left over for benefit increases. Another way to think about it is we're going to hear a lot of advocacy in the next couple of years about extending those Bush tax cuts again for the upper 2% of the income distributions, households with $250,000 or more. The cost of extending those tax cuts is precisely what it would cost to fix Social Security for our children, our grandchildren, and our great-grandchildren.
Now,
so that's a little background, but
right.
Now, let me get specific to the commission, though.
Okay, yeah. And now, but just let me ask one more question. Is there any other government program that you can point to that we can be sure will function at 100% capacity for the next 30 years?
No. And Social Security is actually the most conservatively financed government program. It has a dedicated stream of income. We watch it very carefully. The actuaries at Social Security, under the guidance of the trustees, which include three cabinet members and several other people, every year they issue an in-depth report, and this should be seen as a strength of the system. We try to anticipate problems with enough lead time to allow us to make changes that are needed from time to time.
And before we talk about your work on the 82-83 commission,
sure.
Before we get there, my understanding too is that when the Social Security trustee, that when we say 2036, we are actually using, there are three different projections based upon different economic models, and we are actually using a model, I think it's A, B, and C. We use the B model, which has historically always been on the conservative, has erred on the conservative side. In other words, has erred on being more cautious.
Okay. I think I would say that you're part right there and partly wrong. We do use the B model. The intermediate assumptions are used. Sometimes it's been, you know, again, these are not predictions. These are projections.
Right.
Sometimes we've erred, or Social Security projections have erred on the conservative side, sometimes on the liberal side. I don't mean politically, but
right.
By and large, the actuaries have been pretty darn good. You know, one, in anticipating changes, and one reason they give issue annual reports is so they can make small changes. As it looks like life expectancies are increasing longer, they make an adjustment. So you can argue each of the assumptions they use as being too generous or too stingy in their assumptions, but by and large, it's a pretty good model, and it's served the country very well.
So the 82-83 commission saw that there was going to be a problem in payouts to Social Security. So what exactly did they do?
Okay. All commissions are obviously political. This commission was a political commission, but it also was a negotiating commission. It created a table where persons from across the political spectrum could talk about options, and did so in a reasonable way. They put together a fairly balanced package, and this was at a time when there was a financing problem, and this is 1982. 2011 is not 1982. In 1982, it was absolutely appropriate to have roughly 50% of the short-term problem resolved by benefit cuts, 50% resolved by new resources income. In long-term Congress, the balance of the package actually focused more on cuts than on revenue increases in the long run, long-term. But today, so the model of that commission is often used as, this is what we should do today. We ought to have a 50-50 split. We ought to have reasonable people come out with a proposal and then move it through Congress. Today, we have a very different situation. We had the near collapse of our economy. We've seen middle-class Americans lose home equity. We've seen them lose their pension savings in substantial ways. We see many people having insecurity in terms of jobs. The last thing we ought to be doing is cutting the one system that's sound, that provides core protection to every American family, protection against retirement, but also protection against loss of income if a parent dies so that they leave something for their kids, loss of income if a parent's disabled. It's a hugely important program, and we ought to actually be thinking about, and we could afford to do this if we wanted to have a reasonable discussion. We should be looking at a retirement income crisis that's heading our way, and with large numbers of people unprepared, and in order to protect middle age and younger people, we should probably be talking about increasing protections through Social Security, because the private pension system is on very shaky legs at this point.
The other day we were speaking with James Galbraith, who suggested even perhaps temporarily lowering the age of retirement as a way of essentially clearing out some of the, of the excess unemployment.
Yeah, it's an interesting you're going to 1961, when they lowered the age of eligibility for Social Security for men from 65 to 62, a congressman stands on the floor and says, if 2 million men accept these benefits and retire, that's 2 million jobs for younger workers. We certainly should not be talking about raising the retirement age. We certainly should not be sending out a message that because high-income people who are politicians, editorial writers, academics in tenured positions, and high-income people who are secure are living longer, that lower-income people have to work longer and get a smaller benefit. And lower-income people's lives are not, life expectancy has far from increased at the same rates as higher income people. We can go back to retirement age, but we should not be, I think Galbraith's idea should be given serious consideration on a short-term basis. We certainly should not be talking about raising the retirement age, and we have a huge problem of many people as the retirement age has been raised since 1983. We have a lot of people who have taken early retirement as a last resort under Social Security, and they take a permanent reduction in their benefits.
Now, wait a second. I just want to go back and just track this for a second. What was the original age of retirement for Social Security?
65,
and was it ever dropped down to 62 or no?
In 1956, it was dropped down to 62, early retirement for women. You could take a benefit, but it would be reduced actuarially so that, to account for taking it 3 years longer. And then in 61, in the midst of a recession, Kennedy proposed, and during the Kennedy years, it was dropped for men to age 62. So effectively, we have a whole range of retirement ages. You can accept your benefits anywhere from 62 to age 70, and depending when you accept them, the benefit is the benefit amount is adjusted. So today, for people reaching 66 today, the age of the normal retirement age for them is 66. For someone born in 1960 or later, the normal retirement age will be 67.
And by normal, you mean that's when you get your full benefits?
That's when you would get your full benefits. But it's a little more complex than that, because if you continue to work past age 66, say you're a 66-year-old today, you continue to work to age 70, you get 8% increase for each year you don't take your benefits.
Right. So, I mean, that's something that people should
understand.
So there's
a whole sliding.
It's not mandatory that you stop working at that time. You can actually accrue some extra money. And now, let me ask you this.
Let me just add one thing there,
sure,
if I may, Sam, which is, in many ways, you could say the retirement age in the United States is 70. You can accept your benefits as low as 62. But the important thing to understand about raising retirement age, no matter how you slice it, it's a benefit cut. Each year you increase retirement age, you are cutting benefits by about 6 to 7%. So when Congress increased the retirement age in 1983, it cut benefits for people born in 1960 or later by 13-14% already. If Congress, as this is being proposed very significantly, if Congress increases it another 2 years, that'll be another 14% cut in people's benefits. And that's not just if you take it at the so-called full retirement age or normal retirement age. That's a cut at any age you take it along that 62 to 70 spectrum.
You know what is astonishing about this conversation? Because there's been much speculation, I'm sure, as you know, that this idea may be put on the table by President Obama at the State of the Union address. What astonishes me about this conversation is that we are supposedly talking about creating 14% benefit cuts for people. This is just looking at these numbers as completely antiseptic and clinically,
yes,
without a notion of, you know, how much suffering somebody may have to go through to work for those extra couple of years, or the cat food they may actually have to eat. We're talking about saving 14% cuts in benefits because we're so afraid in 30 years that we may have 25% cuts. I mean, is just absurd.
Oh, it's nuts. It's much worse than that, though, my friend, because in the name of protecting the future, you've got it absolutely right. In the name of protecting future generations, we want to eviscerate the benefits for the future generations, especially for the middle class in the future. And the 14% cut in Social Security is just one piece of the cuts they're proposing. The biggest cut they've been proposing is a change in the way they index the benefit formula. And for someone, say, who's earning about $60,000, $70,000, a middle-income worker, say, throughout their lives, who's young, it could be roughly a 35% cut in their benefits when you add in the Social Security retirement age change and you add in the change in the indexing that they're proposing, and you add in also a cost-of-living adjustment, just a technical change they're proposing in cost-of-living adjustments, we're looking at a 35% cut. They're calling this progressive because they're saying it hits at higher end people, but it really hits right square in the middle class. And in fact, even at the low income levels, we've done analysis that shows they say they help low income people, but they really don't. The great bulk of people with less than $10,000, only about 20% of them receive some of the benefit that they're proposing.
So
fundamentally, we're eviscerating the system, undermining the politics of it by reducing benefits for high-end people. And remember, we already have a system that's very progressive in that if you work long and hard at low wages, you get a proportionately larger benefit. Now, if you work long and hard at high wages, you get more benefit in dollar amounts, but the rate of return is about half of what you would get if you're working long and hard at low wages. And there's a reason for that. And this is what's totally forgotten in this debate. The purpose of Social Security is not to have good financing. The purpose of Social Security is to protect the American public against loss of income. If a parent dies, if you retire, if you become disabled, that is the goal, and it's to provide broad-based protection. Financing is extremely important, but we have this policy debate where all we talk about is the financing and we forget what we're trying to do.
Let's be honest here. This is simply a naked theft. This is simply naked theft. You cannot in any way, come to the American public and say, we're afraid that in 30 years that Social Security is going to be pay out promised benefits 25% less than it says it is now. And we're going to save Social Security by cutting 35% benefits today. That's just simply naked theft because they don't want to return that money that they borrowed, that we all made fun of Al Gore about his lockbox, and because we all trusted there's no way that our leaders are going to steal money that has been put in by our ancestors into Social Security, that is going to be put in by our predecessors for Social Security. We all trusted that they would actually that the full faith and credit of the United States government meant something, and this is simply a backdoor way to steal that money.
Sam, I mostly agree with that, and I'm going to say this: it is the 83 since 1983 we have been paying more into Social Security than it was needed for each year's payout, in part to help smooth the way towards the retirement years of baby boomers.
Right.
That was planful, as you mentioned. Back in 82, people did know about the baby boom, in spite of the fact that this co-chair of this recent federal commission, the fiscal commission, Alan Simpson, the co-chair, actually made a statement on tape, videotape, saying, back in 82, they didn't know there was a baby boom.
Right.
This is
yes.
The person who, I mean, it's scary. This Social Security has been put out on the chopping block in the most irresponsible ways. Now, the fear people have, the argument that we can't afford Social Security is fallacious, but more than that, it gets tied to the federal deficit, and Social Security has nothing to do with the federal deficit. But people say, well, Social Security's loaned $2.6 trillion to the government, and someday the government's going to have to pay that back. So that's only worthless IOUs. Well, that's no more worthless IOUs than the green things we have in our wallets or the bonds that other governments hold, the U.S. Treasury notes. And so what they're saying is, because that might come due, we have to default on that debt by cutting benefits. So effectively, it's a backdoor default. So I agree with you. If they cut benefits, because they don't want to pay back that $2.6 trillion from the trust fund, they are defaulting on the federal debt. It's irresponsible. And to the American public out there, many folks who have lost jobs, many folks who are struggling to keep homes and things like that, they look at it and they say, my God, these folks bailed out the banks. They're running wars on credit cards, but somehow they can't simply pay enough into the system to ask people who make $107,000 to pay the same as the rest of us, which would fix it. It's really, there's this huge disconnect between Washington insiders and elites and the American public. Our polling and everybody's polling tells us that whether you're a Tea Partier or a union household, whether you're liberal, conservative, or moderate, Democrat, independent, Republican, across the board, Americans do not want retirement age raised. They don't want to see benefits cut. And the one thing that they do favor as a majority is lifting the cap so that everyone pays the same rate. So you are correct. You're pointing to a problem. The other thing that the public knows very well, because they're the beneficiaries of it, we have an efficient system. The system works. It protects Americans. Only 1% of every dollar that's spent is spent on administration.
Wow.
That's a shock.
That is a shock. I didn't realize it was that efficient. I know that Medicare is about 3 cents on every dollar.
Right, 2 to 3 cents.
But that's quite impressive. Well, Professor, I cannot tell you how much I've enjoyed this conversation.
May I put in one more word?
Please.
To just strengthensocialsecurity.org. There's a tape on there that shows the president's promise to the American people that he would support and not cut Social Security or raise the retirement age. We want to help him keep that promise. We think it's very much in the interest of our president and of persons who want to advance.
We're going to play that
Social Security.
We're going to play that. We're going to play that tape right after the break.
Okay, and please sign on the website if you agree with it. Please send a note to the White House to help the president help all of us keep our Social Security strong and sound, especially for our children and grandchildren.
Professor Eric Kingston of Syracuse University and strengthensocialsecurity.org. Thanks so much for joining us on the Majority Report.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Bye.
All right, folks. I will take your IMs in the post-show, MRP. That may not be quite a sexy enough name. Folks, please, if you can become a member of the Majority Report, allow me at this time to ask you to become one, because we need your help. And also, get some coffee. Just coffee.coop. 10% off if you use the coupon code MAJORITY. It's delicious coffee. We're just about to have some right now. All right, stick around for the post-show. You can IM me at Majority FM. Back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. This just in. you know what? Let's save this for tomorrow. Man, this is going to be a fun 2 years of me shitting on Joe Lieberman. I can tell you that right now. I'm going to really enjoy it. I'm going to really enjoy it. I'm going to enjoy the fact that I really do think it's going to be interesting to sort of see the who can be, you know, put Lanny Davis, Joe Lieberman on a chart maybe. Maybe we could have a chart on our website and see if, get people, you know, interested to see who's going to win the race to be the biggest whore.
Did you see the thing that Lanny Davis posted the other day on the Huffington Post?
No. Was it an apology? Oh, wait. Yeah, I heard about it. I heard it summarized. There was 3 points in Joe Lieberman's career. In the 60s when he was a civil rights worker, and then at one point when he actually performed the circumcision on Lanny Davis's kid, and then Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Those are three highlights of Joe Lieberman's professional career. And, you know, this is what you do not know, that Joe Lieberman actually performed Lanny Davis's son's circumcision with a $20 bill. He actually used a $20 bill to circumcise Lanny Davis's son. And I believe it was a $20 bill and an invoice that he had sent to an insurance company. I have to, you know, yesterday I said that Joe Lieberman may end up being a lobbyist for insurance companies, and I was corrected because I actually do think that this, and I cannot remember, and forgive me, the IMer and the post-show yesterday, said that a good chance that Joe Lieberman's actually going to go where the money is, which Homeland Security, all the connections he made, and I would agree. Yeah, there's a lot more money there. Rudy Giuliani makes a ton of money on privatized Homeland Security contracts. And I am sure Joe Lieberman will be out there. But, you know, I think that he's going to find that, I don't know. I mean, he has no constituency. I guess Lanny Davis manages to write and say, you know, they're just, you know, God, I imagine if Lanny Davis's clients actually had a sense of just how ill-received Lanny Davis is. Does anybody take Lanny Davis seriously?
Maybe Jill Lieberman.
Yeah. I can just go back and forth and talk to each other. You cannot tell me. Joe Lieberman is now claiming that Charles Dulfer, the Dulfer Report, proved, I think, that Saddam had every intention, and particularly to develop nuclear weapons, was developing chemical and bio. He had a structure in place, including nuclear scientists, that he was prepared to support if he broke out of sanctions, which he was inclined to. This is just absolutely ridiculous. I would like Joe Lieberman to get in front of the American public and say, we are going to attack and bomb and kill 100,000 civilians in Iraq based upon the fact that Saddam Hussein, if he had the opportunity to have nuclear weapons, would want them. Could you not say that about every single leader and probably 15% of the American public? Ridiculous. Ridiculous. Now, let's play that Social Security montage that is put out by strengthensocialsecurity.org.
Also, Center for American Future, I think, is also involved.
Center for American Future? I've never even heard of that. Whatever. I've never even heard. You think it's Center for American Progress?
I have my notes here. That's what they say. They might be wrong.
Well, maybe it's true. I haven't heard of that one. But these are, you know, there's music behind it. We didn't put the music there. This is a compilation of different, someone switch my chair around?
No.
Is it higher or lower? Something's wrong with my chair.
Look pretty good in the frame.
Yeah.
Feeling it in my back. Okay, so, this is a compilation that's put together. And these are campaign promises by Barack Obama. Now, you know, I've been having an email exchange also. I try and respond to almost every email that I get. Sometimes I have a short response, but I want people to know that I've read them. And I do. I read all your emails. Sometimes it takes me 5 or 6 days. Sometimes it takes me 8 days or 10 days. But I read almost all of your emails, except for you, that crazy lady who keeps sending me stuff about, you know, that the food safety bill is a takeover and I should have, you know, seeds. I should be saving seeds. I stop reading your emails. I want you to know that. I stop reading your emails. Because they're crazy, but they're not even interesting anymore. And I have my longest correspondence with people who are, you know, sort of, I love to mess with the crazies. I love to do that. I think everybody knows that about me. But one woman who I don't think is crazy, but, you know, she is sort of knee-jerk wanting to protect Obama. And I am not knee-jerk Obama basher, okay? I consider myself very pragmatic, though I think probably certainly to the left of Obama. But this is not, I mean, listen, this is not an outlying position. 80% of the American public does not want Social Security cut or touched at all. And with that 80%, that covers a very broad spectrum of ideology. And there is no reason to cut Social Security. And the cuts they're proposing are greater than the cuts we would get from our benefits if we did nothing. So this is clearly not about strengthening Social Security, saving Social Security, or affecting the deficit. This is about a stealing of money, an upward redistribution of the money from the middle class, from 90% of the workers in this country, to the top 1%. Period. It's a cut. And it's not about bashing Obama, but if he does this, he's going to destroy the Democratic Party. I said this. When did I say this? 2 months ago. I know we have the video, right? And sure. I don't need to be a pollster to know what was reported, you know, by Frumkin. Well, here, let's hear the promises first.
And when you look at how we should approach Social Security, I believe that cutting benefits is not the right answer. I meet too many seniors all across the country who are struggling with the limited Social Security benefits that they have. That raising the retirement age is not the best option.
But John McCain's campaign has gone even further, suggesting that the best answer for the growing pressures on Social Security might be to cut cost of living adjustments or raise the retirement age. Now, let me be clear, I will not do either.
I think that's why the best way forward is to first look to adjust the cap on the payroll tax.
I don't even need to hear any more. I mean, we just heard it, right? I will not do either. I will not raise the retirement age. I will not cut cost of living increases. Am I bashing Obama to say that was the promise he made? Now, look, I would love to be wrong about him bringing this up at the State of the Union or at any time in the future. I would love to be. But I'm not the guy who's going and speaking to reporters from the Economic Policy Institute, and they are not coming out with this survey now that they took just after the election. Because I'm imagining that there's indications he's going to say this during during the State of the Union address. And I also think it's quite interesting. You know who I think saw this poll a week or two ago? Harry Reid, which is why you heard him so forcefully come out on Meet the Press. Speculation on my part? But good, that's exactly how he should react. I'm glad this story is out here. I want everybody to talk about this story. Because I want the Obama administration, if they are contemplating this, to be very, very nervous. I want every Democrat, elected Democrat, to be very, very nervous. Let me give you some of the quotes from these pollsters. And these are not, you know, Stan Greenberg is not, you know, some wild-eyed leftist. Democracy Corps is not some wild-eyed leftist pollster unit. This is, you know, these guys are Clintonites. It was rhetoric, like everything's on the table. That's how the public feels. This isn't a policy debate in the public's mind. This is a core value. Stan Greenberg said, this is central to what Democrats do. Once you pull back on that, what is it that Democrats believe in that you want them in office at a time like this? Historical GOP hostility to Social Security, Greenberg said, is a critical part of their vulnerability. Greenberg says his surveys show that even in the context of deficit reduction, cutting Social Security benefits is hugely unpopular. Quote, there is no stomach for bringing Social Security in any way into this debate, and it fundamentally damages progressives and Democrats if they bring Social Security into it, he said. It's a great way to really solidify our losses, Lake said. Usually, Beltway conventional wisdom is about 95% wrong, plus or minus 5%, Lake said. On Social Security, it's 105% wrong. Heather McGee, director of Demos Washington office, said that when Democrats talk of cutting Social Security, it only serves to support the narrative that government is to blame for the nation's economic problems. Bashing government is a way to shift attention from the decline of the middle class and widening inequality. 7 in 10 voters oppose the idea of increasing the Social Security retirement age. Most of them very intensely. Particularly strong among such groups as young voters, women under 55, non-college graduates, independent women, and rural voters. In other words, those much sought-after swing voters, and I would also add, those who work in jobs that are the hardest to maintain working to age 70. And here's another interesting statistic. This is from the National Center for Health Statistics. Expected years of life at birth. 77.7 years. Now understand that if you are in the bottom half, if you want to call it that way, but within the first 50% of income distribution in this country, that figure is about 6 years lower. For everyone, though, expected years of healthy life at birth, 66.7 years. So enjoy those two other years of working while you're infirm. Now, you may be able to retire at age 62 with even further reduction in your benefits than is presently the case. Start experimenting now with how to flavor your cat food so that it tastes like human food. You know, that maybe that's what we should do. Maybe we should have a government-sponsored... when we were doing Break Room Live, we interviewed Dick Gregory. And he had some people do some research to find some very interesting correlations between poverty rates and sales of cat food. And he was like, do you think these people have more or less pets than people who live like in the suburbs? Why do you think sales of like dog, Alpo, are going up in the inner city? Why do you think it's marketed so heavily there? Raising the retirement age means workers would either have to work longer to receive their full benefits or see those benefits cut. So, you know, that's why I've been spending so much time on this. Is it annoying to you? I don't think it should be. Actually, I thought I learned a lot of new stuff. And I'll tell you something. Yeah. If I'm learning new stuff about Social Security, I know you folks are. No one is more obsessed with Social Security than I am. Eric Alterman, back in, 2005. We had a conversation, you know, he was on the Majority Report back then. Alterman's a very bright guy. And during the break, I'm talking to him about Social Security. He's like, you should write an op-ed for the New York Times. I said, who the fuck is going to the New York Times going to? Like, I to the point where I was, like, surprised that I have other people who are saying to me, like, you know a lot about Social Security. I guess it's a sort of obsessive compulsiveness.
Why don't you write something for them?
Fuck them, man. Yeah. I can't write anything free. I do too many free things for people. Those bullshit. I'm not going to give them. I'm not going to lend the New York Times my credibility. So speaking of douchebags, we should post. We dig up that that video we did for Break Room Live on when Representative Gingrich called into Rush Limbaugh's. Yeah, it was an interpretation of that video because he's back in the news, and there was a report put out by the Department of Health and Human Services showing that up to 129 million Americans have a pre-existing condition and would likely be denied coverage in the individual health insurance market. And Gingrich gets up, and he is...
You are a douchebag.
I wish I'd said he is a douchebag. He gets up, and he poo-poos this number. And then Representative Frank Pallone gets up and defends it. I don't think Pallone defended it in the proper way, frankly, but let's listen to this clip.
129 million people with pre-existing...
Hold on, stop for one second. I should tell you, this is Representative Gingrich. And you will remember Representative Gingrich called in to Rush Limbaugh to apologize to Rush Limbaugh for straying off the reservation. And like I say, on the Majority Report at Majority FM, Majority.fm, we will post the YouTube. Avant will probably post it in his roundup. But so this guy is just a class A, 100% pure, grade A amber douchebag.
We're color-coding douchebag?
Well, I just think about it in terms of maple syrup.
Okay.
I don't know why.
129 million people with pre-existing conditions, they would all have to have hangnails and fever blisters to have pre-existing conditions. And if you believe those statistics, I've got a beach I can sell you in Pennsylvania.
Mr. Speaker, I yield myself 15 seconds.
Gentleman's recognized for 15 seconds.
Mr. Speaker, I just wanted to mention the gentleman from Texas was decrying the HHS study about pre-existing conditions. These are very serious pre-existing conditions, heart disease, cancer, asthma, arthritis, high blood pressure, that people have had their policies canceled or they couldn't get insurance because of these pre-existing conditions.
Gentleman's
I don't think they should
expired.
Be belittled.
Well, you know, I'll tell you why I disagree with Pallone's response here. Because, yes, there are all those pre-existing conditions. But the fact of the matter is that insurance companies will treat everything as a pre-existing condition. That's the point. The point isn't that, well, I'm going to mock these people because they got hangnails or fever blisters. I got to sell them a bitch in Pennsylvania. No, the point is that the private health insurance industry is so fucked up that they will deny coverage if you get treated for bad breath. It's so fucked up that they will deny you coverage if you've taken, you know, Lexapro. They'll deny you coverage if you go and get a CAT scan. They'll deny you coverage for any reason whatsoever, because it is in their profit interest to keep out anybody who may, on an actuarial chart, have any percentage of risk of being sick. You know, so people talk about why is Medicare in such economic problems? And it is. Medicare has serious financial problems. And the reason is because Medicare has old people and sick people under its coverage, period. And old people are more likely to be sick, and sick people are sick. 80% of all health expenses in this country are borne by 20% of the population. And because Medicare has such a concentrated risk pool of people with high risk for being in that 20%, costs are much, much greater. Now, of course, if we had Medicare for everyone, whether it was buy-in or free or whatever, that would distribute the risk amongst the population that is also young and is also healthy and the other 80%. And it would make healthcare costs go even lower. But we can't do that in this country because rich people say we can't. We're not even allowed to talk about it, or you're some type of left-wing nut job. So Pallone missed the mark here. The issue isn't that insurance companies turn people down with asthma or heart disease or this and that. They'll turn you down for anything. And if people lose their jobs and they lose their coverage and they've got these conditions that they already have, they won't be able to get health insurance. That is, if the Republicans succeed in repealing this bill, which they will not. They don't have the guts. They don't have the guts. Because once it becomes clear what they'd be taking away, only the knuckle draggers, the morons who think that somehow our civil rights are infringed by the fact that insurance companies are regulated, only those morons will care. Don't make me run for Congress, people, so they can address those morons. Let's go to our IM, shall we? I got a lot of stories here, but I have to get to them tomorrow. Oh, can I just do this one? This is so fantastic. So the new governor of Alabama. You know, I didn't even get to the story about the email exchange. I'm going to have to talk about it tomorrow, probably. But you remember, this guy who I had dinner with was like, you know, liberals weren't so hoity-toity or think they know everything better than anybody. You know, people would believe in global warming or something. Essentially, the argument being like, Sam, you're obnoxious, so I'm not going to believe in science. Or to be more specific, Sam, you're obnoxious, so I'm not going to believe in what the preponderance of scientific peer review studies say about global warming. That's more specifically. And he didn't say, Sam, you're obnoxious, because he's too polite. And, you know, he and I are probably similarly obnoxious. So he probably wouldn't even judge me in that way. But he was... Well.
Isn't the libertarian magazine called Reason? Is there any reason to that?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. They all love... It's all reason. Yeah, it is. It is reason. They imply that it's about, like, we're actually thinking. But what it is, no, I have my own reason. I have my own reason. I have a small business, so that's what I think. Taxes should be low on small businesses. Or I have a need for, you know, whatever it is. Whatever I have a need for, that's what government should do. Anything that I don't have a need for, that's what government should not do. That's what the Founding Fathers had intended. The Founding Fathers intended that government serve my specific needs, period. So this notion that somehow, you know, well, Northern is coming down here telling us what to do with our Negroes. You East Coast liberal elites in your smoked salmon limousines. your limousine's made out of locks. Well, here's the governor of Alabama just a day after he's been elected or installed, 2 days after being sworn in as governor of Alabama. 2 days after sworn in as governor of Alabama, he says, where is this? This is fantastic. Now, I don't want you folks to misinterpret this. Anybody here today who's not accepted, he says this during his speech in a church. Anybody here today who has not accepted Jesus Christ as their Savior, I'm telling you, you're not my brother. And you're not my sister. And I want to be your brother. There you go. And then he said, like, oh, I was saying this as a private citizen. I'd just been sworn in. I forgot that I'd been sworn in as governor. If anyone from other religions felt disenfranchised by the language, I want to say I'm sorry. I am sorry if I offended anyone in any way, he told reporters. Why would people from other religions, or no religion for that matter, feel disenfranchised by that? Yes, sir, you're not my brother and you're not my sister. You're my douchebag.
You are a douchebag.
I love it. I love it. He was trying to relay something that is fundamental to our faith, that people who believe in Jesus are related, said Jay Wolf, pastor. He didn't mean that. He's not part of the Brotherhood of Humanity. That's fine. Look, folks, there's no reason for anyone to be offended by the fact that I think Jews are better than everyone. I'm not saying that. We're related in the context of humanity. It's just you guys are all the black sheep in the family. And the Jews, they're the best. I don't know what to tell you. I want to say to my listeners that if you're Jews... You're my brothers or sisters. But if you're not, well, we We're going to do a demographic breakdown on how many Jews have joined as members of the majority report. Oh, God. So fantastic. Folks, that's all right. I mean, look, you know, I have no problem saying, like, look, you know, Jesus is my savior. And I have no problem saying, like, there's a brotherhood amongst people. But, you know, just to say, like, if you are not, if Jesus is not your savior, you're not my brother. You're not my sister. She's my sister. She's my daughter. She's my sister. She's my daughter. You know what that's from? Do you? God damn it.
Sounds. Is that a Steve Martin movie?
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
Mel Brooks? I don't know.
It was a little movie called Chinatown.
Oh,
just
yeah.
An incredibly famous movie.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Yes. Now, Matthew has, I am saying that my dinner companion from the other night considers himself an independent, not a libertarian. He emailed me and he explained that. But it's fine that he considers himself an independent, but I am simply describing his ideology. And it is closest to a libertarian. Because he does have that whole thing of, like, you know, he's sort of progressive, like, socially, like, you know, I don't know, he doesn't seem to have a problem with gay marriage or with abortion or any of those other issues. He's just fiscally conservative. And then goes on to say, like, you know, I didn't want to get into this. But he, so one of the email exchanges, he, and I'm trying to guess what right-wing talk radio he listens to, because he does listen to some, and I can't quite nail it. I can usually get, if you give me like two or three guesses, I can guess who your favorite is. This guy, I can't help, I'm thinking Neil Bortz from his language. There's a little bit of Limbaugh in there, because there's this whole thing of like, you know, why are you against people for success? What? When did I say I was against people's success? What does that even mean? Why do you think that, this is what he said, why do you think that we suck so bad that we created global warming? What? I don't think it's a moral failure on the part of humanity to have had the Industrial Revolution and created harm to our planet because we didn't know that we were doing that. I do think it's a moral failure at this point to our children, but it's not a moral failing of all humanity. It would be a moral failing of this generation to the next. But it's not a question of me thinking he watches. Oh, he watches Fox? No. Oh, you know what he probably was? Fox. I bet you he, like, Kudlow, right? Kudlow. That's who it is. Kudlow and Neil Cavuto. Bingo. Don't need you say no more. And but he also said, you know, if Democrats had, you know, $250,000 is not that much in New York City. You're not a millionaire if you have $250,000 in New York City. And look, that's true. New York City is the most expensive place to live in the country, I think, at this point now. But you don't have to live in New York City. Sometimes you might have to for work. But he said, if Democrats had proposed something like, you know, $700,000 or down to maintain tax cuts. And I was like, dude, they proposed $1 million. And sent them the link. I haven't heard back since that. Which I'm not saying he's not going to. I know he's going to email me back. He probably just doesn't have time. He's probably not as obsessed with this shit as I am. Like, oh, I've got to go to the bathroom, or I've got to do something very important. I'm trying to think of what important things I do. Nothing. But I'll do it after I write this this email for 45 minutes. Let's call. Hold on for a second. I'm going to prank phone call somebody. Do you have my phone thing up?
Yep.
She never answers her phone because she's afraid it's debt collectors. That's why she doesn't recognize the number, so she won't answer.
Hello?
Yes, hello. Is Jessica Mabley, please?
Is she?
Yes, hi. I'm calling from the credit company, Euro.
Which credit company would be that? Come on, please.
What is that? Is that your kid?
Yes, it's my kid.
Who is that?
This is what I'm saying. It's his madhouse here.
Is that? Oh, I should tell you that we're on the air.
Oh, well, you want to talk to my 3-year-old on the air?
Now, is Annabelle aware that her birth was postponed for the canceling of the Sam Cedar show?
She isn't aware of that yet. I'm waiting till she gets a little older so she can really understand the importance.
Right. Do you want to put her on? Put her on for 1 second.
Okay, hold on.
Hey, Annabelle, say hi to my friend Sam.
Hi.
Hi, Annabelle. How are you?
Good.
What's going on?
I have a friend over, and her name is Ellie.
Okay. Well, I don't want to hold. I don't want to keep you. But thanks for that update.
Hello.
She's very articulate for a 3-year-old. She's not three.
Yes, she is.
Is she four?
Well, she'll be four in April.
Oh, okay. Forget it.
Yeah.
No, she's extremely articulate for a kid that age.
She is. She's quite brilliant.
I'm going to have to reevaluate Mila's progress now. I'm not as happy with my daughter. All right, Jessica. It went very well with Professor Kingston.
I thought so. I listened, Sammy.
Yeah, he was fun to talk to.
Yeah, he's very knowledgeable.
And who do we have for next week? Anybody on deck?
Well, we're hoping that we have Chris Hedges early in the week, so I'm going to confirm that this weekend.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And I'll update you with further progress on the booking front.
Okay, great. Looking forward to it. Let's get Alterman on. I got his book already.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye, Sammy.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, let's take some IMs. I saw a crystal count. Lieberman to Ariana. There were weapons of mass destruction. Cap locks. Cruise control for cool. Harold. I could see another sequel. Weekend at Bernie's 3. Republicans go through all the manners of hilarious hijinks to disguise the fact, even from Senator Sanders, that their Obama repeal act is actually dead, disguising it with sunglasses, dancing, cavorting around, propped up between two senators' shoulders. That's actually pretty funny. And it should be Majority Report post-show, MRPS. Yeah, maybe you're right. David, here's an article about how a Republican tax cutter now wants higher taxes for the city, but only after he has a personal tragedy. It's funny. Then I'll check that out. I'll use that tomorrow. And David, we are looking at the latest graphics you sent. I actually did a tweak too myself, which I think is pretty good. I'll show you guys later. Thank you, David. McAdair, hey, same great show. Swiss banker convicted for giving secrets to WikiLeaks. Oh, he was convicted? He just gave them the other day. Judge gives Elmer a suspended fine for breaching banking secrecy and giving client information to whistleblower. Oh, interesting. We need a real progressive candidate. Thanks for informing us about Social Security. You're the only one doing so at the moment. Now I have something to pester all my friends about. Thanks. We need to change the profit motive that capitalism seems to exploit. Well, yeah, I mean, capitalism is to seek a profit motive. That's fine. That's what it is. That's what it does. But we need a very heavy hand of government to heavily regulate it. What about the governor of Florida? He's a douchebag to the 10th degree. How can someone like that get elected? I don't know. Do you still do That's Bullshit? Is Al Franken too much to ask for as a guest? I haven't been doing That's Bullshit. Once we get like into more of a rhythm, you know, remember, I just started doing Ring of Fire now, and I have other, you know, things that we're trying to get going here. So eventually, when we're working like clockwork around here, and when, you know, I would like to have these guys that are here being paid for full time, even though they're, you know, here at full time, but they have other endeavors that they have to do because you can't live on $1 pizza alone every day.
You can for a couple months.
You can for a couple months, which is a little scary since we're now officially in month three. Is Al Franken too much to ask for a guest? You know, I'm in touch with Al on occasion, you know, via email, just very rarely. Very, very rarely. I mean, he's a senator now. And let me tell you something. If I requested Al Franken to come on, you know, from his, like, press person, and they said right now at this juncture, yeah, we'll come on, I would say, you know, you shouldn't. Because, I mean, I would like to talk to Al, but I would also sort of, you know, the type of stuff that would be exploited on some level. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Well, Franken's going on liberal, progressive, crazy socialist podcasts. Do you realize Al Franken spoke to somebody who said that it would be more efficient to provide health care by a single payer to the entire country? Do you realize that this senator went on to an audio show where someone had the audacity to say we shouldn't cut Social Security by 35% to prevent the potential for cuts in 25% 30 years down the road? I don't know why I'm doing a Southern accent, because all those people who are advocating it are extremely are not Southern. And to the extent that they are, they all have a more refined accent that has been nurtured at prep schools and on the Washington, D.C. cocktail circuit. Hey, whatever happened to Svengali Says? That's what I meant to look at today. Will you look up his blog? What happened to Svengali Says?
Diary of a Mad Economist?
Yeah. Dude disappeared. If you're listening, Svengali, I take it personally. You should know that. I tried to, speaking of taking it personally... Marin did a video chat last night on Yowie. And here's a tip for you. Yowie does not work on Macs. I mean, it works, but you have to uninstall Google Video, which I was like, why would I do that? I don't know. Some other... So, and then I tried to get on my wife's computer. She didn't have Google Video on there, and it was just extremely frustrating. And he saw my question and was trying to take, you know, as a video chat, but couldn't. Speaking of taking it personally. Let's see, Max says, when the professor partly agreed with Naked Theft, did he mention which part he didn't? I missed it. Yes. Well, I think he didn't want to say theft. Well, no. I should say he's right. And I wouldn't know. It is naked theft. But there's also an element of people who want to do this not for the sake of naked theft, but simply because they hate Social Security as an effective government program from an ideological standpoint. So to be fair, and I don't know, I'm going to say half, but understand that shorthand, it could be one quarter. I don't know the percentage. One part of the reason why people want to cut Social Security right now is naked theft. And another part is not necessarily shared by the same people, is a deep-seated ideological hatred of the program because it's so successful and it proves that government can function well and keep people out of poverty. But I did catch that too, Mark's aside. Kevin, 11-7-21, my bet is Lieberman becomes a Fox contributor. He'll be their far-left liberal voice. Yes, true, but, you know, look, he could go on Morning Joe a lot. He did to this morning. He could be a contributor that way. There's a lot of places for him to go. I don't know that he would go to Fox because I think he would want to go to some place where he could be the rational, you know, like when he was in the Senate, it made sense. Fox made sense to him. But now what he wants to do is go for a different demo, a wealthy demo, because he's going to be lobbying for people. So he's going to want to go into something that is less ideological. He would become like a contributor for, you know, even maybe a CNN or like a Scarborough show or a CNBC or a Fox Business, where he can go on and actually do a twofer. You know, because you can remember, what's the best place for him to be to shill? You can always anticipate what Joe Lieberman will do if you can figure out what will be most profitable for him personally. He doesn't care about ideology. He doesn't give a shit about ideology. Your libertarian dinner friend is what you call cantankerous. Now, I just noticed that he emailed me while we were on. Let's see. No. I just saw something else. Not control as much. Control. Okay, that's oh my god. Like, we're now in like literally multicolors and caps as a way of like distinguishing how we're responding back and forth. Trip. Let's see. I don't recommend that folks watch the Morning Joke on a regular basis, but the Lieberman appearance this morning was gut-turning. Called Ariana sweetheart very dismissingly. I love how these new govs, like Christie and Alabama asshole, think that their jobs are 9-to-5, 40-hour work weeks. Family is tantamount. I have a private life where I can be honest about how I feel and screw it. I'm not sure. I think Lieberman offended everybody on a Mo joke. Oh, it could have been a setup, though. Well, I'll check it out. Rusty Cole. Hey, Sam, my wife is a solo physician. While administration for Medicare is 1% to 2%, it keeps lowering and lowering reimbursements. My wife is a specialist for 6 years extra training and now gets paid the same as a family doc. After they destroy Social Security, Medicare is next. Well, yes. I mean, Medicare is trying to say – Medicare is in big trouble. And it's dropping a reimbursement cost because it can't afford to reimburse at other rates because – their risk pool is so risky. Their pool is so risky, I should say. We need to expand. We need to have buy-in for Medicare. We should drop it down. 55, we should drop it down to 45. I would buy into Medicare tomorrow. Klug. Hartford, MetLife, State Farm, 5,000 insurance companies in Connecticut. Emerald Cooking Show, to put some pow in your cat food. I apologize for straying from the wilderness reservation. Oh, sorry, we are not brothers either. I had the same Mac meltdown trying to tune into Yowie to see Marin Wednesday. Yeah, there you go. 6428, please keep up the Social Security info. Very useful to me. 60-year-old, very worried about benefit plus COLA cuts. Thank you. You're the only one I know is really focusing on this, not Oberman, not Maddow, not Randy. You know, like, Maddow's been doing a great job with all the gun control stuff. And everybody has their bailiwick. Is that the right use of that word?
Yeah.
Please offer a senior or Social Security 5-month option for membership. You know what?
It's not a bad idea.
Maybe I'll do that. Capitalism is like a casino. If we let them cheat, the whole thing breaks down.
Hey, Sam, what did you think about the single payer thing that's going through with the Vermont lawmakers? Did you hear about that?
Livermont?
Vermont.
No.
Yeah.
Send me a link. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Spaff, I want to thank you for yesterday's program, standing up for us union guys, and today's program, Social Security. I love your passion. Thanks, Spaff. My pleasure. Dede Fru sent you an email with a screenshot of ironic caption over the Sammy Can screen. I am willing to examine the possibility of conversion to Judaism. All right, fair enough. I hope you're wrong about the so-do speech, but if you're right, the president will have some seriously pissed off Dems. I couldn't agree with you more on both counts. CC, Medicare also in trouble because of fraudulent billing, which I think is the new health care law is supposed to be addressing. Of course, you are right that insurance companies will claim anything as a pre-existing condition. In a perfect world, the congressman would have said that hangnail is considered so, but to be fair, he only had 15 seconds and wanted to stress life. I didn't say that clip to crap on Pallone. I mean, good for him for standing up. I was just saying, I wanted to make another point. Warren, the poor, the attacks on government health care programs rely on free ride fears and scapegoating of poor people, which have been so successful in defunding social welfare programs around the country. Attempts to tie SSI into the general fund will result in this argument being used against disabled people. Yes. Yes, agree. Don't we have to eat cat food? You can live on a bowl of white rice a day. It's called the Viet Cong diet, but it has the side effect of increasingly radical political views. Well said. You know who we got to get on is Tim Wise. Put it on the guest sheet. Look him up. Put it on the guest sheet. Don't tell Jessica. Let's just get her the guest sheet. She obviously did not see it the first time. Tim Wise is a guy who speaks incredibly eloquently about race. And I saw him at Edwards Nation, and he, basically brought up something that I had never, ever even occurred to me. That welfare recipients were not demonized prior to the mid-1960s. There was no demonization of them whatsoever. There was a fully accepted premise that we need to help poor people out. Until the Civil Rights Act. And soon it became welfare recipients are welfare queens, and we all know what Rush Limbaugh meant when he talked about welfare queens. We all knew. It just, welfare became blackified. And then it was much easier to shit on poor people. Have you been watching Oberman Maddow, Chris Matthews' coverage of the Tunisian Revolution? Oh, yeah, I forgot. None of them has mentioned it once. Well, to be fair, I haven't mentioned it either. I mean, it is sort of surprising that they have mentioned it all. I mean, I like to think they have better, more assets than we have, resources. And, you have a, 23-year long-term dictator overthrown. It's news. And I think it's also like the first sort of revolution that you've seen in that context that has not been driven by religion. I don't know if it's the first, but it feels like the first. And that's important. Kevin Semicolon, you ought to fire your minions for not knowing Chinatown. No shit.
I like the two Jakes. That's my favorite. I'm sorry. That was a joke.
Is that the sequel?
Yes, that's the sequel.
Is it worse that I've seen Chinatown but don't recall that scene?
Don't lie to me.
No, it's true.
Don't lie.
I own the DVD.
What? You own the DVD?
I do.
Huh. All right. May have to borrow that. Ryan Wyden, Oregon Talking, waivers to healthcare. Oh, gosh, we're way over time. Folks, Fraudulent billing in Medicare is largely bullshit when it comes to doctors. Every doctor I know is so paranoid about an audit, they never try anything. Yes, I think that's true. Got more stories. Going to have to get to them tomorrow. One undone bird. Never heard anyone speak to this, but maybe you know. What if a person has Native American health care? How would they be affected by the new health care law? Do not know. Do not know. Do not know. Good question. All right, folks. Oh, you know what? Email me that question, one done, undone bird, because I'm going down to this healthcare conference Thursday and Friday of next week. I will try and do a live show from there. And I'm also going to be doing a lot of recording for Ring of Fire for some extras on their site. Maybe we can share those extras with them. I'm sure somebody there might know. Or that would be a great question to see if I could stump everybody there with. All right, folks. See you tomorrow. Please, if you can join membership, please do. Please do. And we'll be back tomorrow. Tomorrow will be Casual Friday. So cash. Bye-bye. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the lie. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I guess somewhere the choice is made for the option where you don't get.